Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
118. I've got some audio from some coaches around the NFL talking about their job security. Feels like at this point Jay Gruden is safe and staying put in Washington, but there will be several vacancies. A lot of coaches already know they're going to be out. One coach today told his team it's his last rodeo with that group, so we'll get into the coaching carousel coming up in a little less than 15 minutes. Let's get to the phones and wrap up your calls on the 8-8 conversation. Look, it's mediocre, and you are the epitome of average. Everyone knows that. Do you feel better about this team if they win their final three games to wrap it up at 500 than you would have if they went 5-11 like they have so many times before? Chuck in Charles County, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, sir. 8-8's huge to me. I think 8-8 means more to me than any of your callers combined.
Why is that?
Because I'm going to the game this weekend.
Ooh, very good. You got tickets, and you're actually going to a Week 17 game on New Year's Eve Day, huh?
Absolutely. What we had, you won't believe this, we got three tickets for $95. We got a $10 parking pass, hotel for $150, less than $95 a piece to go to the game, all three of us.
Wow, good for you. That's awesome. Now, you're from Charles County, and you're staying in a hotel by FedEx, or what?
Oh, no, we're going to the game. We're going to New York to the game.
Oh, I'm stupid. They're not at home. You're right. That's awesome, man. Congratulations. I'm sitting here thinking they're in Landover, Maryland, when they are in East Rutherford, New Jersey. So he's going up to New York for New Year's Eve. Good for you, man. That's awesome. Little road game, wants to see his boys get a win. Yeah, if you're paying that kind of money to drive up 95 to New York, stay in a hotel overnight, you're not doing it in hopes that the Redskins don't pull off the game to finish their season at 500. Rob in Gainesville, what's good?
Hey, man. Love the show, dude.
Thanks, buddy.
Let me ask you a question. Can you honestly get excited about garbage time against garbage teams to go 8-8? Because that's what it feels like. That's what it is. Mad.
I don't know that it feels like. I mean, that's what it is. It's garbage time in the season against garbage teams. That's a fair assessment.
Well, and let me point this out. This is the second time, only the second time this year, that they have an opportunity of winning three games in a row. They didn't do it the first time. This is the second time they do it. And my problem is this complacency they seem to have with no urgency, okay, of getting sustained wins. And so my biggest fear is that they go 8-8 and they feel like they've really accomplished something, and there's no real sense of urgency going into next year.
Well, I've heard people say this. Danny does this all the time when he's on the show, and unfortunately he's not here today to make this case, but he says all the time he hates the idea of going 8-8 because he thinks that it means that Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen and those guys will walk around the building with their chests out and we're close and we're a player away. I don't believe that to be the case. I just don't think that's how it works. I've talked to enough of the people on that staff and in that building to know they're not going to be content going 8-8. They see that no one's coming to the games in December at FedEx Field. They hear what you guys say on the radio and see the reactions at their rallies and things. No one wants this team to be 8-8. This is a pretty proud organizational history with the three Lombardi trophies. So the idea that they're going to work less hard this offseason or they're going to do less to try to improve because they went 500 as opposed to if they went 5-11 isn't correct. Now, if you don't want Jay Gruden back, then going 8-8 is a bad thing because he's more likely to come back. If you don't want continuity, then 8-8's a bad thing because you should have rooted for them to go, you know, sour in 5-11, so they blow it up. I think that's incorrect. I'm not one of those people. So for me, the better you play, the better the indicators for the people that are the bean counters that need to see the wins and the losses because they can't figure out that the process has gotten better. Ethan in Michigan, what's up?
Hey, just wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that 8-8 you should not be proud of, but it is definitely something that you should be. It's something to move forward from. You know what I mean? Like, if you can get into the playoffs with 8-8, it shouldn't matter what goes on from there, as we actually get in and can move forward at least a little bit.
Appreciate you. See, that's another interesting conversation is, would you feel better if they made the playoffs as, say, an 8-8 team? I wouldn't necessarily. It'd be cool for that week leading up to the game that they're a playoff team. But you didn't earn the playoffs anymore if you're 8-8 in the playoffs, or if you're 8-8 and you didn't make it. That just means that the teams around you played differently and that the league was watered down. Your process was the same. Your record is the same. I got a guy on Twitter here tweeting with me. I'm at Grant H. Paulson. I tweeted out, if three straight wins to end a year 8-8 does not matter, 18% of your season's been dismissed. Man Bear Pig says, no, just the significance of the other 72% is being emphasized. I said, emphasizing 72% would be saying that 8-8 is not good enough, which I think we can all do. To say that there is no difference between 5-11 and 8-8, or that three straight wins at the end of the year is irrelevant, is dismissing 18%. He says, did we make the playoffs? No. Then nothing else matters. Again, that's a straw man argument that you can't really combat. Because if that's how you feel, we can't have a conversation. You've made up your mind that it's playoffs or bust. And that sounds great on a poster. You know, Herm Edwards could scream that and make $1 million at ESPN. Did you make the playoffs? Then no, nothing matters. Cool. It's a platitude. Say it really loudly and be a tough guy and stick your chest out real far when you do it. It's just not the world I live in. Things do matter. Context matters. Perspective matters. Where you've come from, where you're going matters. That's like saying, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example, but, okay, someone gets a job and they're able to save, let's say, $1,000 over the course of a year. And then you come along and you go, how much money you got in your savings account? And they're like, oh, I'm right around $1,000. You go, well, if you don't have $25,000, you can't live for 3 months after you get fired. You don't have a good savings account, man. You're not doing a good enough job. Well, I haven't had any savings in the last 7 years. I just finally got the ability to start putting a little bit of money away. Ah, no, it's $25,000 or you're not good enough. Okay, I guess. No. What is my job? How much do I make? How much is my overhead? What do I have to spend? How many kids do I have? I can't just save $25,000. I don't just get to make the playoffs by rolling the football out on the field. What's going on in my organization? Do I have 22 guys on injured reserve? Did I have the second hardest schedule in football? Maybe saving $1,000 when I've never saved $1,000 for the last 25 years is a really good year for me. No, no, $25,000 or nothing. Okay, just be loud when you say it and it'll sound more right. Devin in Haymarket, what's up?
Hey, Grant, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Grant, I have to respectfully disagree today.
Cool.
Here's the deal. This is where we're at with the Redskins, that we potentially might finish 8-8, and we're happy about it. I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, or some people, I should say, not all. I'm not happy about it. I predicted 5-11 at the beginning of the season. The fact that we might finish 8-8, I'm not happy. I mean, it just means that we didn't suck as much as I thought we were going to suck. But here's the deal. Yes, we had a very tough schedule this year. Yes, we had a lot of injuries. But this is not just a one-time deal, as we all know. This is a perpetual problem year in and year out. I was looking at the playoff history since we last won the Super Bowl. I think it's six playoff appearances in the last 25 years. So basically once every 4 years we go to the playoffs. And I believe most of those times we got knocked out in the first round. Right. This is unacceptable. Totally unacceptable.
I agree.
That's my opinion. Thank you.
Well, hold on. Don't hang up yet. Everything you're saying is correct. But that doesn't all come back to this season. Like, so much of that doesn't matter to this conversation about this year. And you said people are happy with 8-8. I don't know that many people that are happy with 8-8. I'm not, by the way.
I corrected myself. No, I said some people. I meant some people.
I understand,
people.
But I don't know anyone that's happy with 8-8. I guess my point is,
okay.
My conversation, I want to know if this makes any sense. I'm not happy with 8-8. I think that 8-8, considering what happened this year, is an admirable performance and something that you can be proud of, that they didn't let the ship sink, that they didn't just pack it in as they have so many times, that the injuries didn't cripple them and make them one of the worst teams in the league, that the schedule being as bad as it was, as arduous as it was, they still knocked off Seattle. They still outplayed New Orleans for 56 minutes. They still went to Kansas City and had a chance with a catch in the end zone to beat them. They still beat the Rams, who could end up in the NFC title game. I mean, to me, to say that what they did was admirable and better than 5-11, which is what I'm saying, is different than saying you're happy being 8-8.
Fair enough. But I'm looking, and you're right, if the conversation is just solely on this year alone, then yes, I agree with your point.
I'm talking about many other fans,
I'm looking at the last 20 years.
I get it, but I can't do anything about the last 20 years if I'm Jay Gruden, or even if I'm Bruce Allen, or if I'm anybody else. What do you want me to do? been terrible for a while. I can't allow that to affect how I operate now. I got to make decisions for today and tomorrow based on this group. Right here and right now, the Goonies. Up there, that's their time. Down here, it's our time. Our time. It's a Goonies reference. If you haven't seen the movie, you're probably, I would say, over 40-ish. And you don't like good kids movies from the late 80s, would be my guess. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Some coaches that are in trouble that might lose their jobs. What they're saying about their job security. You'll hear from them next on G&D.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The NFL coaching carousel is going to spin pretty rampantly in the next couple of weeks with Black Monday looming, as they call it, the National Football League. There could be as many as 7 coaches out of work at the start of the week after week 17. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. No Danny today on 106.7 The Fan. So the carousel started spinning yesterday, as a matter of fact. Dateline Arizona. Stories about the Cardinals and Bruce Arians. Pro Football Weekly had a report yesterday that Arians and the team were going to part ways at the end of the season. They had learned from sources and had an exclusive report in the morning. We talked about it on the show a little bit, that Arians was going to be leaving, that the two sides were going to kind of mutually go in separate directions. Arians has been with the Cardinals, by the way, since 2013. They won 10, 11, and 13 games. He was one of the more favorable coaches in the league. Suddenly now they're 7-8-1 last year. They're going to be 7-9 probably this year, and the 65-year-old is potentially going to be out of a job. He originally, as a great offensive coordinator, took over the Colts in 2012 when Chuck Pagano left for treatment, and he helped get them to the playoffs in a year in which they made a deep run. They were 9-3 under his watch. So as a coach, he's 48 wins, 30 losses, and one tie. But the last couple years in Arizona, as Carson Palmer took a step back, their quarterback situation has been just a debacle. They have not been good, and Arians all of a sudden sees the bloom off the rose a little bit. So Hub Arkish comes out from Pro Football Weekly saying with his report, they're going their own way. And yesterday, Bruce Arians said, not so fast. I've never even heard about this. This is ridiculous. Here was Arians.
I have no idea. I don't even know who the heck this guy is and where those supposed meetings took place. That was fun. It was fun. It was good reading.
Fun reading, he called it. He went on to say, though, that he's not sure where the reports are coming from or why they're coming out, but he is, sounds like, as of right now, still expecting to be an NFL coach with the Cardinals next year.
If you want to ask me about this fake news story that has come up, I'm quoting the president now. Nothing's changed. I don't know where all that came from. Nothing's changed in the last month and a half, and everybody keeps asking the same question.
You don't necessarily hear him going hard, though, about next year. It's just kind of him saying, I don't know where this came from. This is kind of ridiculous. It's fake news. I do not think that Arians is going to be the coach of the Cardinals next year. I'm not sure what happened with the report from Arkish and Pro Football Weekly. I'm guessing they had it sourced pretty well. I know Diana Rossini, a couple of people from ESPN, came out and refuted it yesterday as well. But it has made sense for me for a while that this would be the year they go in their separate directions. Remember, Larry Fitzgerald is contemplating whether or not he wants to retire. Carson Palmer is closer to 40 than 30 at this point, is coming off of an injury. If you're going to make a change at quarterback, if you're going to lose a guy like Fitzgerald, you're going to go in a different direction offensively, then maybe the guy as the architect of the offense who's had some health issue of his own, who after two straight seasons might be butting heads with the front office a little bit, not being around, makes sense. It's certainly plausible to me. So I would say the Cardinals could be a team looking for a head coach. Another team that could be in the market for a coach is the Houston Texans. The Texans and Bill O'Brien will be wrapping up a season that could result in 4-12. They're in Indianapolis this weekend playing the Colts and Chuck Pagano. Pagano is almost assuredly not going to be back. The question is, will O'Brien be? Now, Bill O'Brien is still considered an offensive savant, despite the fact that his offenses in Houston have mostly been inept. Part of the reason is that he's never had a quarterback. When they had Deshaun Watson playing brilliantly early this year, they looked like a legitimate AFC contender for the first time. But O'Brien has handpicked a couple guys, including Brock Osweiler and Tom Savage. And at some point, you got to pay the piper when those things don't work out. So if they get Deshaun Watson back this coming season with a defense that is still really good, I actually think this is a great opening. This would be a really good job for someone to have. But O'Brien was on record as saying, with 1 year left on his deal after this one, he doesn't even need an extension. A lot of coaches don't want to go into a lame duck year. Remember Jim Riggleman quit on the Nationals. You heard Dusty Baker saying, I should have a contract by now last season. Guys do not like managing and coaching on the final year of a deal because they think it sometimes is harder to build a culture over several years when people don't know if you're going to be around. Apparently, Bill O'Brien is not worried about that.
I'll coach his team. I mean, as long as they want me to coach his team, I'll coach a team. I mean, we have a good staff. We work very hard. It hasn't been a great year. We know that. We know the business. Like, we're not blind to what goes on in the NFL. I mean, everybody understands that it's a bottom line business. But we believe in what we do. And, you know, again, a lot of those decisions aren't made by me, you know, so I just do the best job I can to work with the staff and the players to try to get a win on Sunday.
Now, here is an example of where I always say, because I think Redskins fans, they hear someone say 8-8, 9-7, you can't fire this guy. They've gotten better. And they think that that means you're just okay all the time being average. And that's not the case. Context of what were you before you got there matters a lot, too. The Houston Texans were 2-14 under Gary Kubiak the season before Bill O'Brien got there. And that was kind of a sum of all fears year where everything that could go wrong did go wrong, where they had some injuries. But if you go back the two seasons before that, they had won 10 and 12 games. Bill O'Brien inherited a great defense and a team that was, for the most part, ready to contend. Again, they had had a disgraceful 2013, but they'd outscored their opponents as a playoff team in 2011 by 103 points. They'd outscored their opponents in 2012 by 85 points. The norm for them has been 9-12 wins, really, in the last six seasons. The one outlier being 2013. They'll go 4-12 this year. He was 9-7 the last 3 years. I would keep Bill O'Brien because I feel like the injury to Deshaun Watson is what crippled him and that team this year. But I don't think it would be unjust at all if they moved on from him after a four-season run where in a terrible division, it was there for the taking. A stranglehold. It could have been yours the last 4 years. You could have really put your stamp on this thing, and they botched the quarterback situation three different ways before Watson. And then he got hurt, unfortunately. So I'm going to keep O'Brien, and I'm going to tell him, hey, it's now or never time. You're not getting an extension. We need to see major progress. We need double-digit wins. We need a playoff win. We need you to start to show signs that you're actually improving us. Because right now, we're exactly what we were when you took over four seasons ago. We got to see it right now. And the other problem for him, unlike Jay Gruden, Jay's offense has largely been very good in Washington. The problem for the Texans while O'Brien's been there has been the offense. He's had great defenses, thanks to Wade Phillips, thanks to his coordinators. Where's your offense? This year, I'm going to blame it on his quarterback getting hurt. But last couple of years, you were happy, it seemed like, with your quarterback situation. I went and got you your $18 million man, and we all know how that went. Last guy I want to call attention to is Dirk Cutter in Tampa Bay with the Bucs. Dirk Cutter, who I was a believer in coming into the year because I really liked how he handled this team, watching them behind the scenes on Hard Knocks. Like the rest of everyone that watched Hard Knocks, I was fooled on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I couldn't have been more wrong about this club. I thought they were going to be really good. They've been awful. Dirk Cutter was asked about his job future yesterday.
Is it a distraction of any kind for you?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, it's your life. You know, it's your life. It's what you do. So, you know, just flip it around. And of course it is. But, you know, we all, players and coaches, you know, we're paid to do a job. And you try to do it to the best of your ability. That's all you can do.
Bucks were 9-7 last year, 4-12 this year. Last place team. If he, and that's if they lose this weekend, I should say. If he loses his job, I think it's going to be because of the regression this year and the lack of performance of Jameis Winston in this offense. Because, again, this is an offensive coach. So if you hire an offensive mind who's a great play caller to come in here and score some points and put up yards, you better have a really darn good offense. That's where Jay Gruden, I think, benefits a lot from the way the Redskins' offense, even with all the injuries this year, has performed statistically. But for Jameis Winston to finish the season, he's going to be you know, around probably like 19 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, I think, off the top of my head. He's going to be in the mid-3,000s in yards. He's going to end up having missed three games or so. But he did not take a step forward. They had weapons like Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard on offense, and they have largely underachieved. They went like 9 games or something crazy without a 40-yard play on offense with DeSean Jackson running routes for them. How does that happen? Think about how easily the Redskins would strike up plays with DeSean Jackson when Sean McVay and Jay Gruden were dialing up stuff in the dirt. So if Dirk Cutter's out of a job, I think it's going to be because of the side of the ball he controls not being good, not because they went from 9-7 to 4-12. But those are some of the coaches that are going to be potentially coaching for their futures this weekend around the NFL. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Final half hour. At some point, we got to talk Jimmy Garoppolo. You are listening to G&D. All aboard! The Jimmy Garoppolo train is leaving the station. Who's hopping on? Grant and Danny, no Danny, 106.7 The Fan. I've been wanting to talk Jimmy G the last couple of days, so I might as well crowbar it in here. I've gotten a chance to go back and watch a lot of him over the last few days. I love what I'm seeing from Garoppolo. Now, I was on record, and you can go back and kind of find it. I didn't really know what to think of him. I am very dismissive of guys who play well for great teams in small sample sizes. Matt Castle did it at one point in time. Jacoby Brissett was decent in New England enough. I mean, he had a big win where he led that offense. Some cultures are just plug-and-play operations where it almost doesn't matter who the receiver is that day, who your linebacker is. They'll elevate their game. People around them will pick up the pace, and we're going to be just fine. We're going to win 37-17. That's the Patriots over the years. So from the quarterback standpoint, Josh McDaniels, who I'd hire as a head coach in a heartbeat, has a great design. They get receivers open. They are very smart. They use the width of the field more than the length of the field. There are years where Tom Brady does not rank anywhere near the top of the league in deep balls. I think this year they've thrown more of them with Brandon Cooks coming over. But it's a very horizontal passing game. It's running backs and it's tight ends, and it's all the things you guys hate about Kirk Cousins, quote-unquote, checking the ball down, though, end quote. And that's kind of what Tom Brady does. It's a dink-and-dunk at times outfit where they're screening you to death and they're throwing the ball short middle of the field, safe and accurate, and they're getting yards after they catch with Amendola and Edelman and Gronk when those guys are healthy, or James White or Deion Lewis are making plays. Look at the Super Bowl comeback. The greatest performance by a quarterback ever. A running back caught 14 passes and was the MVP of the game. And I'm not taking anything away from Tom Brady, who is, in my lifetime, the second best quarterback I've ever seen. Maybe the third. I might put Aaron Rodgers ahead of him, I guess. But he's one of the greatest quarterbacks that has ever lived. I love his game. He's super smart. My point is, their offense is designed in a way that I think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to look pretty good in a small sample when he plays. What do you do when you leave there and you're in a different offense with a different organization and it's no longer 72 and sunny? It's a little bit harder. Cue the San Francisco 49ers, who when he took over the offense had a one-win ledger. He's made 4 starts and they've won all 4 of them. We need to slow our roll on crowning this guy as one of the best quarterbacks in the league, is my first point. This is what we do now. We are so reactionary in this industry. A guy plays well, he's great. A guy plays terribly, I told you so, he's awful. We watch games to basically confirm what we already think now. Nobody just goes into anything open-minded. No one turns on the TV and says, I want to know if Jimmy Garoppolo's good. They turn on the TV and they say, well, I said that he wasn't good, so let me wait for the one throw where he looks bad so I could say I told you so and I could tweet out that gif. I'm on record as saying he's going to be a superstar, so let me find his best play of the game and post that and make sure everyone knows he made this play. I don't know when that started. I think it's a social media thing. It's also kind of in this industry now a thing where if you're just reasonable and rational and you're smart and you provide information, you're probably not going to get very far. You have to kind of have the hottest take, the loudest take to get attention. If you're Skip Bayless, you make millions. If you're Stephen A. Smith, programs are built around you. If you're just a guy who says smart things, Spencer Tillman or Louis Riddick, then you're on at midnight on Scott Van Pelt's show a lot. But all I can tell you is that while Jimmy Garoppolo has been fantastic to this point, I cannot believe the overreaction to how we're already crowning him. I read something the other day that he's one of the 5 best quarterbacks in football. I read that. He's made 4 starts with San Francisco. Saw someone advocating to pay him Matt Stafford money right now. 49ers should definitely sign him. Don't make the mistake the Redskins made. Don't want to see more. You've seen enough, I think. By the way, if you're Kyle Shanahan, just give me a 5 out of 10, I'll make him a 7. Give me a 7 out of 10, I'll make him a 9. Garoppolo, you've seen enough to know, is probably a 7 out of 10 at worst. I'll make him great in my offense. I made Brian Hoyer passable. I made Matt Schaub good in the prime of his career. I made Rex Grossman rosterable in the second half of his career. Look at what he does for passers. It's a system that every quarterback should go to the bed at night praying that at some point they get to work with Kyle Shanahan. But look at Garoppolo's numbers so far. He threw for 293 yards in a 15-14 win over the Bears. Didn't have a touchdown in that game. That was on a 1 to 10 scale. Now, am I grading him on a this guy just got a starting job for the first time scale, or am I grading him on a NFL quarterback scale? I'd give him a 6 out of 10 in that game. But he made a couple of plays I loved. Just moving around in the pocket, kind of getting away from some defenders. Great athleticism. The next week against the Texans, another terrible team. The Bears are awful. The Texans are awful. They won by 10. He had one touchdown, one interception. He threw for 334. Made some big plays down the field in that game. Again, it was a pretty good performance. I saw a lot of stuff I really, really liked. They beat a bad team. The next week, they played the Titans. The Titans, who are a fringe playoff team, I happen to think that they're the most overrated team in the AFC and that they stink. But you can't really say that because they've got a winning record, and if a couple things clicked differently for them, they would have been in the playoffs. He went 31 of 43, one touchdown, no picks, managed the game pretty much, and a ton of yards in that game. He threw for almost 400. It was like 380. This past week, good Jacksonville defense. This was the most telling game for me so far. This is the one that turns your head. 21 of 30 for 242 with two touchdowns and one pick. A 102 rating against a Jags defense that gets 6 and 7 sacks a week and is arguably the best in the National Football League. They beat them by 11. I love that game. So he's played one really good team, played really well. He's played one mediocre team that's a little bit overrated in the Titans, played really well. He's played two terrible teams and played well in 4 starts. So I guess people are going to hear what they want to hear here, and I'm sure I'm dismissing him and I don't like him or something. If I'm a 49ers fan, I'm ecstatic. If I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm doing the Hall & Oates double guns walk around the facility today because we found our guy. I think he can play, and I've seen enough now in a quarter of a season to feel like, okay, the Garoppolo thing that everyone was saying, this guy might be a real player, they were right. This guy's got a chance to be an outstanding quarterback. I just don't understand why we have to make the decision today that this guy's top 5 in the league. Get over that. He's played really well. Can you just say he's played really well and that he's pretty good without saying he's top 5 in the league after 4 games? I mean, can you imagine if after Kirk Cousins had played 4 games well in a row in 2015, someone's going, you got to pay this guy $27 million. This guy's top 5 in the NFL. Is he? It's been 4 games. The Redskins had to see a whole nother season after that, and these were executives. I think most of us knew they should have paid him the $19 million that it took on the franchise tag after that first season. But that was 16 games we'd watched him, and he'd been in the building for 3 years before that. I mean, at that point, you'd seen Cousins play in 12 and 13 and 14 and then a whole season in 15 before we're saying this guy can play. You've seen nothing from Garoppolo other than that sample of 1 month of football. But if you're not excited and enamored with this kid's upside, you got to check him out this weekend. He's legit. I really believe that. 800-636-1067, you want to hop in. A couple of the rookie quarterbacks have chosen very different paths to take on whether or not they want to play with the Cleveland Browns. I'll explain next on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, stretch run and final furlong here. Appreciate you spending the day with me. Danny's been out for the week on holiday break. I'm actually going to be out tomorrow and Friday. We'll be in good hands with Andy Pollin and Tom Lavero, though, so make sure you're listening as they fill in here on Grant and Danny. I want to get back to some of your calls on Jimmy Garoppolo in a second, but Randy's in King George, and I'm being told he's got a pretty interesting development in his sports fandom in life. So, Randy, what's going on? I was told that this will be a fun call to take.
How you doing, Grant?
What's up? Is this my guy, Randy?
Yes, sir. How's your mom and dad doing?
Oh, wow. I'm doing very well, man. Good to talk to you again.
That's good. That's good. CBS had a knockout football pool.
Okay.
This year and throughout the country. And a little under 18,000 people started it. There's down to 11 people the last week, and I'm one of them.
Wow. So, wait, this is a, when you say knockout, like a survivor pool where you pick one team
yep.
every week, you can't repeat
yep.
the same team?
That's correct.
So you have gone now
17. 1 week they put a roadblock in where you have to do your pick plus pick their game.
Oh, really?
And I picked, it went from 270, I think, down to 14. I picked Carolina over Minnesota.
Wow. That was a great game, too. So you're 17-0, and you're down with 10 other people.
With one game left and a tiebreaker. Now, I'm debating whether to go Philly over Dallas or Atlanta over Carolina.
Ooh, okay, let's...
I need your expertise.
First of all, I hate that I'm the guy you're coming to here. What's at stake here, if you don't mind me asking?
$5,000.
Oh, man. Okay.
I consider myself a winner already. If I got this far, Grant,
yeah,
I'm happy.
I hear you, buddy, but I want you to win $5,000. My gut reaction to your question, though, Randy, I don't like that Carolina-Atlanta matchup at all.
Okay.
I know that Philly has wrapped everything up, and that makes their game with Dallas also ugly. But
right.
I do not like the – because if I had to pick just for $20 who's going to win that Carolina-Atlanta game, I feel like it's just a toss-up. I have no gut feel on that. Atlanta's playing for its playoff lives. Carolina is already in, doesn't have a whole lot to play for in Atlanta. But
yes.
If I had to – I would pick Carolina probably to win that game. So –
okay.
I don't like that. I would avoid that. And I'm not feeling great about the Eagles with nothing to play for over the Cowboys. But I feel like that's just...
Or even Detroit, Green Bay.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Could you take the Lions?
I was thinking of that. But is Rodgers coming back? Is he back?
Rodgers is out. Honestly, of those three options, yes, I like the Lions better than I do a Eagles team with nothing to play for or Falcons, Panthers. I kind of like the Lions in that game.
I'll keep that in mind. That's not a bad thing. I thought Rodgers was coming back.
No, they shut him down.
Play.
So let me ask you this real quick
okay.
before I let you go.
Sure.
If a bunch of you guys win still and there's like six guys remaining or something,
right.
Do you split the pot? How does that work?
It's a tiebreaker. The tiebreaker game is the Atlanta. I have to make a pick plus also pick the score of the Carolina-Atlanta game.
Okay.
And then they determine pluses and minuses, how many did you get for, how many against.
Gotcha.
And that, you have to hit the score. So.
Wow. Good luck to you, buddy. That is awesome that you're still
all
in
right.
the hunt.
I appreciate your help there, Grant.
You bet, nice. Buddy. Good catching up with you. Wow. He is still alive in week 17. I love that. Those are so fun. Chad in D.C., what's up?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you?
Not bad, not bad at all. First thing I'm going to do is answer your Garoppolo question, and the last thing I'm going to do is give you a statement about why all these teams are so bad. Every quarterback comes out his first year that has any talent and always looks pretty good. So I reserve judging anybody on what I see the first year, regardless of how many games. I can just rattle off a list of quarterbacks that look great their first year, and then once the team's got some film and footage on them, their second year they struggled and you weren't quite sure what they were. They were talking about benching Cam Newton his second year.
It's a good point.
It just goes down a list of quarterbacks that always look good until you get footage on. And the reason these teams look the way they do is because, unlike the Patriots, other teams pick their starters and anoint them without having them earn the job. This guy's my starter when he comes into camp for next year, before anybody's earned anything. And that's the one thing the Patriots don't do. The Patriots will cut anybody, regardless of what you paid them or where you drafted them. Other teams are going to force you to play because they don't want to be wrong.
That's actually a great point. I agree. I completely agree. I think that is something that's done in the business all the time. One guy that comes to mind is Dak Prescott. You know, the step back that he's taken this year is more has been asked of him. We just crown these guys so quickly. And it's all kind of just confirming what you think. You like the guy, so he's got great numbers. He's great. Well, what if he doesn't have a running game for a few weeks or he doesn't have his best weapon? Or what if Dez Bryant isn't scoring touchdowns or going for 100 yards anymore? can he elevate the play of the guys around him? Bo in Charlottesville, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. Listen, I don't study, you know, the cap and salaries and length of contract, et cetera. So I'm asking a dumb question, I think. All I hear is you're either going to have to pay Cousins $35 million next year or he's leaving. And what I want to understand sort of legally and contractually is why can't they simply say, hey, Kirk, bring your rep. We're going to sit down. We're going to take the next 7 days in hardcore negotiations with the goal of simply signing you to a contract at some number. Is that where they are, or do they not have the option of simply negotiating with the guy?
Well, they absolutely have the option when the season ends of doing that. If they're hell-bent on getting a deal, they could say to Cousins, hey, come to Redskins Park. You're not leaving until we get a deal done. That would mean, A, maybe most importantly, them paying him more than they want to, which they've shown no indication that they're willing to, and B, Cousins being willing to sign a long-term deal, which I'm not convinced right now that he is. That isn't to say he wants to leave. I think he'd be happy coming back a year at a time again, but I don't think he necessarily trusts the people running this business to be able to win a Super Bowl here in Washington in the next couple of seasons. And if he doesn't think he can win a Super Bowl, then why is he going to sign long-term? Something they've got to figure out and clean up now. They're making up for some of their past mistakes. Chad Dukes versus the World is live in 5 minutes at 2 o'clock. CDVTW, make sure you check out Chad. For the fellas behind the scene, Tommy and Sean doing a great job as always. Grant Paulson saying so long. If you want to listen to any part of today's show, go to grantanddanny.com/audio. Check out the all-new Hour by Hour podcast. Andy and Tom will be in for us tomorrow and Friday. We'll be back at it early next week. Thanks for listening. Happy holidays.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.